This is Future Proof with the IoT, a podcast series that is part of the Digital Transformation Solutions for Industrial Machinery podcast. This particular mini series is focused on how to leverage digitalization to overcome manufacturing disruptions and bounce back stronger. I'm Jörg Ludwig, and I will be your special host for this mini series, as Bill Butcher will be back to the podcast after this mini series. Today, in our first podcast, we will be talking about the challenges that manufacturing faces in a normal state and how those escalate when the situation gets worse with an economic downturn, such as the pandemic we see actually, a natural disaster and so on. We'll discuss the general trends that were hampering productivity even before COVID arrived. So I'm pleased to introduce my first guests, and they are from Siemens Bad Neustadt, an electric motor factory in Bad Neustadt an der Saale in Germany that is being developed as a showcase factory for digital applications in metalworking. Welcome to Heiko Dickers and Sebastian Oeder. Can you both please explain to our listeners about the factory and your role at it?
Yeah, hello, Jörg. My name is Heiko Dickers, and I'm the team leader of a digitalization team since beginning of 2017. Our scope is be an enabler for our production units in terms of digitalization. I'm with Siemens since more than 30 years in different functions.
Hello, everybody. My name is Sebastian Oeder. I'm head of the production unit Main Motors in the Bad Neustadt Motor Factory. I have a background as a production manager at Siemens Energy, and before I was working for 5 years as a consultant at Siemens Corporate Technology.
Thank you both. In the words of Klaus Helmrich, member of the managing board at Siemens AG and previous CEO from Siemens Digital Industries, he said, "Bad Neustadt was on a very, very difficult course 10 years ago, and together we have succeeded in finding an innovative way that has given the future security. And today, everyone can look back with pride on what has changed over the past 10 years. What have been the biggest challenges on this journey?"
Yeah, indeed. It was a difficult time 10 years ago. From an economical point of view, a lot of employees should have dismissed and so on. And in summary, not the best situation. Yeah. We were at the point where we had to change some things and had to start different things completely new. A lot of processes had to be improved, optimized, and maybe also more automated. But first, we had to start with a lean shop floor management to kick out waste of our processes. Yeah, because it makes no sense. If you want to digitalize, first you should have optimized these things. Otherwise, you digitalize waste also. So, and in parallel, we looked forward also where it could help to automate things, where possible environments where robots also could support. Therefore, we had to develop a clear vision of the next years. What are our goals in digitalization and automation? But all based on the factory needs. Very important is don't forget the people. You have to involve the people who are impacted from these measures and involved in these measures. And I can have very good ideas from my office view, but it could completely wrong if I want to improve a specific shop floor process. And therefore, involving the people and use their experience and listen to their needs. The last thing is more a cultural topic as well. In the digitalization world, not everything is clear from the very first beginning. It must be allowed also to fail, especially in Germany, sometimes a problem. And here our former CEO also set up the phrase, deliver fast to learn fast. Start with simple and small use cases. Look whether we had a good result or not. Redefine, try again, and so on. But also don't hesitate to stop things if you see there's no success.
Thank you very much for that answer. And our next guest is Colm Gavin. He is Portfolio Development Manager at Siemens Digital Industries. Colm, thanks for taking the time to talk about leveraging digitalization to overcome manufacturing disruptions. With over 20 years of experience in the Siemens Digital Factory, do you think that the challenges that Heiko just explained are something that can be generalized to industrial machinery? Do you have any other insights from your career experience?
Yes, I absolutely agree with the comments from Heiko that as companies try to improve their automation and optimize their processes, that they have to really look to see what's possible. Interesting, Heiko mentioned including people in the process. Absolutely. How do we collaborate with people to bring them on board? So because it's a journey to innovate with new technology, bring people on board and find what works as far as, you know, approaching this industry 4.0, everything around that, the new technologies, how do you embrace those new technologies, finding value and incorporating people at the same time?
It sounds like there are a few trends that underscore the challenges facing machinery customers. For example, new business models, hyper automation, low cost competition, and new generation in the workforce. Machinery has always been about automating manual processes, but now customers are expecting more connected, adaptable, predictable, and extendable machinery. To understand that impact, we should delve a bit deeper into each of those trends that are shaping industrial machinery. Before we move on to these industry trends, we still have one more guest to introduce, Matthias Lutz. Could you please explain your role and background at Siemens to our listeners?
I started long years ago within Siemens in supply chain and procurement. And in 2015, I moved on to our industrial customer service organization. It was pretty clear for us that data is the new source of innovation in services. And then we have started to build up our industrial IoT offering, today called MindSphere. Since then, I've talked to more than 300 customers regarding IoT and use cases. And one thing I want to share with you about my learnings, it's not about technology on the first hand. It's more about ways how to interact with data and how to enable your organization to come up with new business models and new ways how to interact with your factory.
Okay, thank you, Matthias. So it seems to be that the data is the new gold. And with your experience helping customers start new business model in the sense of a new IoT business models, can you explain what they look like and how are they changing the industry?
What we see currently with industrial machinery customers, that more and more of their end customers want to buy outcomes and they want to have new purchasing options, and machine builders need new revenue streams, which, for example, translate into being able to offer anything as a service options. For example, maintenance as a service or machine optimization as a service. Or you could as well look into use cases around pay-per-use. So why don't selling, for example, the outcome of the machine and not the hardware by itself, or new leasing options? So a lot of our customers are telling us, with IoT, I'm now able to introduce new dynamic warranties, for example, or maybe as well pricing or extensions based on the machine use. When using data and using platforms to exchange with your customer certain information, certain, let's say, values, you are actually able to provide much more differentiated value to the manufacturers and an ongoing value add to customers that provides a leg up. You cannot start to introduce new business models without doing the actual groundwork, meaning learning how to connect machines, collect and structure data, and learning how to use this data with actual IoT tools. You have to lay the foundation now.
So Calm, have you seen a significant implementation of these new IoT business models in the last years?
Yes, and we've seen a variety of machine builders, different sizes, try to onboard these new technologies. And I think one of the key things to pick up what Matthias had mentioned is they're trying to increase their service or their revenues from service. In some cases, the revenues from service will exceed what they actually will get from the basic selling of the machine. But I think what we're finding is many companies are still trying to figure out the business model for where they can, what they would offer for their customers, the service, how to offer it in a way that brings value and also is profitable for them. We're working with the company Anguil Environmental Systems in Wisconsin, a mid-sized OEM, a machine builder, and they make very innovative pollution control technologies for water and air cleaning and so on. One of their goals is they would like to significantly increase their current service-based revenues. But they recognize, you know, the only way that they're going to be able to do that is by leveraging IoT technologies to pick up what Mattias said earlier. Because without that kind of remote monitoring and predictive maintenance, they're not going to be able to grow those revenues, service-based revenues, beyond what they already have. And of course, they have the industry knowledge for their machines, their pollution control machines. They know the valuable data that can be extracted from their machines. So they have the know-how required. But their IT department don't want to have to reinvent a whole IoT cloud-based system by themselves. So that's why they're partnering with Siemens to help them on that journey. So, you know, and that's one thing that's important is, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it in the rest of the podcast as well, is, you know, what companies are willing to invest in and how much can Siemens can take the load off of their IT departments so they just focus on the data from their machines and how to turn that into value for their customers.
What about hyper-automation? In Siemens' Advantas January 2021 list, what are the expected IoT trends in 2021? It takes the sixth spot. What is it exactly?
So hyper-automation is what we refer to as islands of automation and connecting, bringing machines together that may have been separate on their own. How do we, you know, leverage the improved connectivity that's happening between machines to leverage the evolving integration capabilities and open standards? That's part of it, to kind of onboard some of this new technology to push machines and have them, you know, rather than having a fixed production line, very rigid, where if you want to embrace flexibility, then the machinery needs to be smart. They need to be able to talk to each other and understand each other. And so it's, you know, leveraging advanced technologies on communication. So that, you know, this idea of a smart factory. One example there would be, you know, leveraging AI and machine learning so that the machines are able to adapt accordingly. We see, you know, one quick example of this kind of hyper automation using AI is AI and vision systems, where you have a quality inspection system and you want to verify, you know, good or bad on parts as they travel through the system. But in many cases, I've been in on site with companies where I've seen operators, they will actually turn off the vision system because it's giving too many false negatives and too many shutdowns. And what they're looking for is a way, if the vision system through AI can learn, can adapt and recognize, well, actually, this is a good part and learn from that. So this being able to teach and adapt machine learning, AI can, it's like an extra muscle, if you like, can help bring the machine beyond its current capabilities without a complete rehaul of the design. The other common way we see AI machine learning as part of, say, hyper automation, another example would be cameras at the end of robot arms for pick and place. And this is where we see convergence of the different technologies, ERP systems and MES systems and automation coming together. So many cases when you program a robot, it will have a fixed path that it's doing the same thing all the time. But being able to teach a robot that it has to recognize, well, you need to pick up these different parts at this time or that time, different sizes, how do you grab them? That's combining cameras with AI so the robot can dynamically grasp different parts and maybe have different paths that needs to place the parts based on what it's picking. That is a whole other level of automation where, you know, the robot is basically changing its path on the fly and the AI is telling it what to do. Those are, for me, some of the best examples for this hyper automation, bringing systems beyond what they're already able to do.
But based on my experience, IoT is not all about the next level of automation. Of course, it leads to better automation. But for this trend, it's about getting actual transparency into machines and monitoring their health, to improve run rates, decrease downtime, improve revenue by decreasing scrap. And much more than this, I think it's as well about to build a system of systems, so making machines able to talk to each other. Hyper-automation responds to the continuous advances in technology and customer demand for customization. It means to deliver a much more personalized experience with flexible machine lines. And eventually optimize the user productivity. Much more than that as well, to get products to markets faster by reducing costs and improve quality. I had a pretty interesting customer conversation, and they said to me, I'm designing my machine with best-in-class design tools, but once my machine is out there in the field, I'm not able to use this data unless I'm getting some service request. And with hyper-automation, so meaning the connection between different systems in the automation chain, these customers will be in future able to use IoT to actually funnel in the real-life data from the Internet of Things system into their design systems and to iterate their product in a much more efficient and faster way.
Yeah, and that completes the digital twin, by the way. Heiko, Sebastian, Siemens Bad Neustadt is in the process of getting fully digitalized, starting the journey 10 years ago. Can it be labeled as a pioneer trendsetter in hyper-automation? How and when did it start? And how has it ramped up to get there?
Yeah, for me, it's unclear whether we are a trendsetter in this way. Maybe this can be rated from somebody out of the factory even better. But we are working constantly on infrastructure and use cases since many years. We set up the environment and the frame where we think we can progress very fast. Therefore, we have a clear vision, a strategy, roadmap, also pushed by our former CEO, Dr. Horing. And he always said, and it's a quotation from him, patience is not required at digitalization. Means, again, also deliver fast, to learn fast, try something new, even if it fails. So we started with a few split heads years ago, where we met once a week to discuss digitalization topics. But the progress was not very fast. Therefore, maybe half a year later, we decided to found a specific department which take care of the requirements coming up with digitalization. Now, more or less 10 to 15 persons working on digitalization automation use cases in Bad Neustadt constantly. With this structure, we increased the contribution on our yearly productivity goals at the shop floor. And one part is also to automate more and more in different areas. But Sebastian, what is your view on this thing?
Yeah, if we talk about the shop floor, that's where I step in. Honestly speaking, we did not use the term hyper-automation so far. But as I understand the meaning behind the trend, I can state that we have hyper-automated systems in place. I just would like to give you some examples. In the production of main motors, we have automated several production steps by using assembly robots. We also automated final test systems for electrical and mechanical tests. For these tests, we are using an AI that continuously analyzes test results and reduces test steps based on an algorithm. For our automated systems, as well as for our conventional machines, we use condition monitoring to analyze and reduce downtimes. Performance management is in place for logistic data like output and lead time. We also use it for detailed process analysis, for example, to monitor the joining forces of our stator and the winding. The sequence of orders is system-based to optimize setup efforts, and a big portion of our material is delivered from or to the production line by an AGV. Another example from our pre-production is a fully automated machine tool that performs the entire setup autonomously by using a camera system, edge, and AI. So I don't know if we are a trendsetter, but for sure we have some really cool use cases in place.
This really has been cool to have you all in the first episode of the special mini-series Future Proof with the IoT. Unfortunately, we are out of time today, but in the next episode, we will keep talking about the challenges in manufacturing and especially about the trends of low-cost competition and new generation workforce. Take care, and we hope to have you again.